The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all of the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Hey, listen, if you're not already, one of the nicest things you can give yourself this holiday weekend is essentially a subscription to the Major Spoilers Patreon page, where we have bonus episodes, extra content, so much more. And the thing is, as soon as we post something, it's delivered right to you, either via your podcast feed or via your email address. You don't have to worry about supply chains. So whether you're going to give a gift of the Major Spoilers Patreon page to yourself or to someone else in your life, now is the perfect time to do it. And special thanks go out this week to Hector Estrada, who upped their pledge this week. So this week's episode goes out to you.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, It's American Thanksgiving, the Marvel way, brought to you the Major Spoilers way. We talk film, streaming, spiders, barbarians, gunslingers, desperados, thugs, pugs, mugs, nitwits, halfwits, dimwits, snipers, hornswogglers, and Methodists. Some of that may not be true since I started quoting Hedley Lamarr halfway through, but what is true, Major Spoilers brings you the best, the apex, the most noteworthy pop culture, 50 weeks a year, and it's on the air.
Welcome to issue 952 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. If you're worried, we will be here next week with a Major Spoilers Podcast episode and maybe one or two other episodes next week. But we're going to be taking most of the next week off because of the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. Now, we know our friends up in Canada have already celebrated their Thanksgiving. So I know they're just going to be sitting around. I know, right? They're always ahead of everybody else. You know, they've got they were ahead of universal health care, ahead of the United States. They've got a better looking president than we've had here in the United States.
We don't have president.
Well, yes. See, exactly. They've realized that they don't need a president up in Canada. Thank you, Ashley Victoria Robinson.
They have a prime minister. News.
Rodrigo, that is your cue.
Sorry,
my cue. Sorry. One, two, three. So the Netflix live action adaptation of Avatar, The Last Airbender, has cast its Uncle Iroh, Monk Gyatso, and Commander Zhao. Paul Sun Hyung Lee will play Uncle Iroh, a retired Fire Nation general and mentor to his nephew, Prince Zuko, and according to most fans, I think, favoritist character. Lim Kay Soo will play Gyatso, an air nomad monk who is Aang's best friend. Sorry, I slipped into the Shyamalan version there. And Ken Lung will play Commander Zhao, a Fire Nation military officer who's eager to advance his personal goals. Avatar, The Last Airbender, currently shooting in a virtual production volume using the same type of technology used for The Mandalorian.
That's right. Oh, I'm sure everybody is excited about... Kim's Convenience and Mandalorian star now being part of the Avatar. What do you think there, Ashley Victoria Robinson?
He also appears in your favorite show, Stephen, The Expanse.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And So does June. Oh boy, I can't remember your last name. I'm so sorry. The woman who plays Appa, Amma Yoon? Also appears.
I think it's Yoon, right? Y-O-O-N?
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. This is great because children, live action children, are always a real toss up. So no matter how the rest of the show goes, Iroh will be the best, which is kind of what happens in the animated shows. Sometimes there's like really bad episodes, but like Iroh's there. So I am hyped. Screw all of the early stuff. I want to go right to Tales of Ba Sing Se, and I do want to cry.
Just cry the whole time.
Yeah, so good. So good.
Go. Virtual volumes like The Mandalorian. So while The Mandalorian looked great in places, I had some words to say about Shang-Chi in the pre-show that people can go check out over at patreon.com/major spoilers. You have any worries about this, Ashley? Apparently everybody's shooting on these volumes up there in the Canada. See, they've got even better volumes than we do down here in the United States.
I don't know if that's true because they probably didn't pay as much money for it as Disney did. I know Star Trek shoots on it. Like, this is the main, there's a different word for it than volume, but this is the big one that's up in
the virtual set.
I don't know. It'll come back to me.
Okay.
That's up in Canada. So I was, when Paul Lee was cast in this, I was sort of not surprised because I knew they were shooting up north, but, I can't tell, like, when I go watch stuff on IMAX, it just looks like a big TV to me. Like, I don't have a sense for like how bad or good something looks really, unless, like, I understand that deathbed, the bed that eats people, looks bad. You know, but you could tell me something's on the volume and I'll be like, sure, if you say so. Like, I have no idea. So I think I'll be fine. I don't think most people will take umbrage with it. I think most people will take umbrage with the parts that they change from the original series. Like, that's not the point of an adaptation.
Yeah, we do have to remember that those creators did leave the show.
Right.
So,
and yeah. Ken Leung was one of the good parts of that execrable Inhuman series that came out a couple of years ago on ABC. He played Karnak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Karnak was one of the things in that show that worked.
I knew a human person who saw that. It wasn't the wig lines, I'll tell you that much.
Well, hey, my name's Matthew. I watch a lot of crap for no reason.
But speaking of adaptations and whether or not they'll be good or not, that was a really good transition.
Yeah, good job.
That was Steven level.
Steven approved.
Thank you. I can only aspire to the Steven level transition and the Scott Johnson level analogy. Paramount Plus. By the way, if you're not watching Star Trek Prodigy on Paramount Plus, you're wasting your life. You should check it out. But they also dropped a trailer for a different thing today that's not Star Trek, and it's the first trailer for the live-action Halo series. Pablo Schreiber plays Master Chef. Master Chief, who might be a chef. I don't know anything about Halo. A super soldier created as part of the Spartan 2 program that leads the assault on an alien threat known only as the Covenant. I hope they're witches. The Halo series is expected to stream in 2022. Please, dear God, someone who knows anything about video games have an opinion on this.
Man, I remember playing the first Halo game and it was fun. And then I never played another Halo game after that.
I'm very bad at first person shooters. I had a whole comment about how I hope in this there's like just one character who always runs up against the wall with his gun pointed directly at the floor and then just gets shot in the back a bunch of times. But then I'll be like, oh, that's me. But yeah. I'm interested in this because I like Halo's lore, even me though too. I'm so terrible at first person shooters that I've never been able to get through any of the story missions on any of the games. So as another bit of like fully produced Halo lore, which I don't think we've gotten since since Halo did the Animatrix. I'm interested to see. I'm curious to see what all they do with it.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see if they're going to. And again, I don't know anything about the series. I'm interested to see if they're going to be telling a new story or if they're basically telling the first game in a series and then the second game and in season two and those kinds of things, because I gotta say some of my fondest video game memories that I have, one of them playing Halo, when you go down, I think you're going down into the ring and you unleash, I forget what they're called. It's been like 10 years or 15 years or more,
since I played it, but you unleash all these creatures that come out at you. And it was like a very terrifying moment, both in the game for the characters in the game, but also for the players. And it's like, oh man, that's something that'll always stick with me. So if they can bring that same level of excitement to this TV series, I'm down for it, but I have no idea how they're adapting it or if it's a new thing. Do you know, Rodrigo?
Yeah. I think it's a new thing. I don't think it's not like picking up from where the games are. It's like a brand new retelling of Master Chief's story, I think. Oh, and
yeah,
by the way,
sure it's going to be a whole new continuity.
Yeah, there are in the Covenant, there are aliens called prophets, but no witches, I think.
It's a bummer.
Are they wormhole aliens, these prophets?
Yes, well, and they send through things to Goldicott.
Well, you see,
that's a timely reference.
And all I know about Halo is if you call Master Chief a superhero, people will come down on you with the force of 1,000 suns. So I never, ever, ever refer to him ever, ever, ever again.
Again.
In fact, just we'll go ahead and bleep that out. But you know it's not going to get bleeped out?
What?
The Eternals. Number one movie top of the box office this weekend. Once again, apparently even topping Clifford the Big Red Dog. 27.5 million brought in this weekend, bringing their overall total to 118 million. Although that is about a 61% drop from the first week of Eternals. I still probably will see it when it comes to, you know, streaming or something.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely watch it. I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, waiting at this point. If studios are upset about a 61% drop and they're like, well, people just aren't going to the theater, it's because you gave them a taste of what it's like to watch a movie in their home and pay 70% less than if they had to actually go to the movie theater to see it. And I think that there are a lot of people that are just comfortable enough to say 45 days. I can wait 45 days. I waited for more than that for Shang-Chi.
That first wave of people who went to see Eternals, and, you know, again, plenty of people are still going to see it, are people who are Marvel diehards.
Right.
And also people who were specifically curious about the Eternals, but the Eternals doesn't have a lot of pull. They're not well-known popular characters, even amongst nerds. They're kind of like hidden back there in a corner somewhere.
Yeah. And if anyone had any thoughts that Clifford the Big Red Dog would knock the Eternals off the top of the heap?
No.
What are you thinking about? I mean, yes, there are selfish people that aren't thinking about their kids, but a lot of parents are still very concerned about their kids going to movie theaters and hanging around with large groups of people unvaccinated.
I get that.
Going to go see that movie. Well, first of all,
I get that
movie looks
Clifford
bad,
so. Clifford is the next largest opening, right? But it's I've seen like three different places do this, like Clifford fails to knock off the Eternals. And it's like, that's the most non-news story we've seen in a while. It's like, nobody was expecting that.
Oh, speaking of perfect transitions, let's talk about some non-news stories that happened at Disney Plus Day this past week. Oh, Disney wanted to celebrate their big Disney Day, and they're like, we're going to do a big thing that's the equivalent of Hall H, and we're going to tell you all about all the cool, awesome, upcoming things that we're working on. And here's my opinion on everything that they announced. They didn't really show anything. They didn't really announce anything that was super shocking, except for maybe the new X-Men animated series based on the 97 series. But they basically pulled what every big Hall H or every big studio presentation has been for the last 15 years. We're going to tell you things that we've already told you to get you hyped about things that you already know about. And we're not going to give you any new information. Like, there was no information given on any release dates on any of this stuff. There were no trailers, real trailers to show. They showed some like little teaser bits that were like 15 seconds long. They showed us a picture of Samuel L. Jackson with his cat scratch eye and then Secret Invasion. I mean, there was literally nothing to share at this event, but people went nuts for it anyway. That's my bitter opinion. I would like to know from you guys, what was your big announcements that you saw at Disney Plus Day, or what were you excited about from Disney Plus Day?
I guess I am interested in that I heard that they are going to show like the missing What If episode next season, right? It's like, we didn't get that Gamora episode. So I think they just punted it to this next coming season. So I'm like, I want to see what that was about.
Matthew,
like
did you have any?
Just waiting to be addressed. That's how much impact it had.
Yeah, Matthew, did you have anything that jumped to the top of your chart? Are you excited about X-Men 97 coming back as a Disney animated series? Are you excited about Spider-Man Freshman Year, a new animated series on the Disney Plus? Are you excited about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers? Are you excited about any of that stuff? Are you excited that we got to saw some concept art from the upcoming Ben Kenobi show?
I was pretty thrilled that they got the original cast back for Hocus Pocus 2.
That's nice.
My wife was like totally thrilled about that.
Kathy and Jimmy,
you know, it's a big get. No, I didn't realize there was a Disney Plus day until
Thank
like
you
the
so
day
much
after.
For giving Kathy and Jimmy the respect she one deserves, but two right? definitely deserves for Hocus Freaking Pocus. She's so good.
Nobody recognizes that Kathy and Jimmy is a freaking genius. Oh, I mean, seriously.
Peggy Hill alone.
Right? Just that. But I mean, if you go back and look at the stuff that she's done, I mean, she is like absolutely a cornerstone of some of your favorite 90s junk. And people are just like, who? And I'm like, shut up. Just shut up. I saw the images of what looked to be Cars Mad Max, which I think should be interesting. I don't know what that is. But yeah, I didn't know about Disney Plus Day until after the fact. So when Major Spoilers started saying, you know, announcers, well, that actually came up the same day, announcements for Disney Plus Day, I'm like, oh, and when I finally had a chance to look at it, because there's no cell phones in my office now, I was just like, oh, okay. I am looking forward to She-Hulk, although I don't think they really showed us anything much from She-Hulk.
They really didn't. I was really expecting, I mean, of the things that we saw, the She-Hulk right. bit was probably the most interesting. Ms. Yeah. Marvel and then Moon Knight were the only things of the upcoming Marvel television shows that they actually had video from. So you know that those are the ones that are closest to being released. But even then, there was a whole lot of nothing in those pieces.
Yeah, they were like sizzle reels.
I mean, yeah, of course. And they were short and they I guess they did what they wanted to do, Ashley. But I was not impressed.
Well, I've been sitting on the sarcastic remark that when you posed this question initially, you said big announcements. And I was going to say, there is no big announcements. This is all stuff that we know about.
Yeah.
People still
lost their poop over all this stuff. And I was just like, oh my God, you people have just played into their con. They just got free PR, you doing the PR for them that now they don't have to do.
Yeah, that's how hashtags work.
I know.
I mean, sorry. I tweeted about it, so I don't know. I don't really have a leg to stand on.
But was there anything that really jumped out to you that like, oh man, I cannot either believe that they announced this or that I saw this this picture of somebody in a costume?
The thing that jumped out to me was David Aja taking to Twitter to let us know that he has not been paid for anything. And after seeing that Hawkeye trailer, I was like, you're just literally doing the run. Well, that's here's devil's advocate, right? That's work for hire. You sign a contract, you relinquish your rights. Like that's the good and evil that comes with it, but you actually make a page rate, which is nice. That's honestly the most interesting thing that came out. I mean, between that and the Spider-Man trailer, there's literally nothing new under the sun. Like, it's the same stuff we knew before. The same people we all know were in it. We're still not in the trailer. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the only other thing that I was mildly interested in was the Marvel Zombies bit, because they used the Robert Kirkman Marvel Zombies logo, just like they did with the Hawkeye thing. And so I don't know if they're going to be trying to adapt the comic book series or if they're going to be building upon the zombie stuff that we had in What If. So that's the only thing that I was mildly most interested in that. It was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Which way are they going to go on that? But everything else, it was like, this was definitely not DC Fandome. And I feel like DC Fandome did a much better job than what Disney Plus did. Am I wrong on that, Ashley? Or not? Because I'm guessing everybody else did not watch anything from Disney Plus.
I've watched none of them ever. Okay. So okay. I just watched the hashtags roll in. I'm not going to sit in front of a live stream about stuff I mostly already know about. No, yeah. I didn't. So I don't actually have a great opinion, except it seems like DC Warner Brothers actually kept one thing under their hat to announce both times, mm-hmm. and Marvel didn't. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
it's nice to see. Nice to see DC with a win on the entertainment game every once in a while.
There you go. All right, everybody. That's the news for this segment. If you want some more news or information about what's coming out from the comic book publishers, sneak peeks, reviews, and a whole lot more, head over to our majorspoilers.com website. You can find out more information there. Or if you've got some thoughts on anything that we talked about, head over to our Discord server. We have a Major Spoilers podcast channel that you can come in and talk about. We also have a general channel, comic book channel. We have channels for just about everything, including sports ball. So you can go over there and talk to your heart's content with a bunch of wonderful people who are already in that community. And if you are a Major Spoilers patron and you haven't done so already, seriously, take the time and go and connect your Patreon account to our Discord server, because that will unlock secret channels where you can come in and listen to us live on Thursday nights when we record the Dueling Review show. This week we are doing something from DC. Oh, Big B versus Batman, or Batman versus Big B number 3. Yeah. So we've got that coming out. Also, if you are someone who's into RPGs and you want to be a better GM, we have the GM Roundtable. We have a new episode of that we are recording on Wednesday this week, the 17th. So you'll want to be there for that. There's a whole bunch of other things that are really cool that are going on over on the Discord server. And if you want to get access to that secret stuff, just connect your Patreon account to that. You can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right, let us jump into some reviews. Let us go back a week to last week, I guess, Matthew, with Savage Avengers number 26 from Marvel Comics.
Yeah, so Savage Avengers, or as I like to call it, that comic that I keep forgetting exists, was apparently, I swear they said this is going to be a 5-issue cool series where Mike Deodato does this cool thing. And, you know, 30 issues down the line, here it is. Issue 26. Written by Jerry Duggan, art by Patch Zercher, shows us what happens after Kulan Goth wins, kills Conan, cuts his head off, and officially destroys the Marvel Universe. Now, you'd think it would be like 20 pages of complete darkness, but no. It's something entirely different. I'm not entirely sure how to describe it. But I will say this, from the beginning, the premise of this book has been Conan, the barbarian, the actual, you know, thing made by the guy, Robert E. Howard, this man wandering around the modern Marvel universe, interacting with, you know, the Black Knight and the Juggernaut and the X-Men. And I don't know if I would call this an Avengers title, and I don't think anyone ever says Avengers in the book. But Dark Avengers is basically Conan and his avenging friends. So his avenging friend in this issue is Kang the Conqueror. So you say to yourself, hey, this guy can travel in time. I wonder, oh, right, we killed the main character on the first page, but we have a time traveler in play. So this battle ends up being, can Kang travel back in time before he travels back in time? And bad things happen, because Kulan Goth, you may remember, is an evil sorcerer who, if he eats you, gets your powers. And he may have taken a bite out of crime and or Kang. So as the issue goes, we see this story happening in anachronological order. However one says that word that I've only seen written. And the parts of it that work really well. There is a fight sequence where Doctor Strange and Doom and Conan and Triceratops are fighting Kulan Goth in the jungle. And you're like, okay, that sounds awesome. And then you see the actual battle and they're fighting, and Doom is like, bah, you people are stupid. And he grabs Kulan Goth and on panel rips his lower jaw off. and says, "There, now you have a merciful death." Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so it's a Conan story. Conan is one of the places in the Marvel Universe where you're going to see blood and dismemberment. But it's also weird and hard for me to fathom Conan the Barbarian, first of all, you know, interacting with Doctor Strange, calling in the troops, because halfway through this issue, he calls for backup and all of the characters from the Marvel Universe, from Ghost Rider to Wolverine to Elektra, show up to help fight Kulan Goth. And I think, now I'm not sure, either 27, which I think is the last issue, or 28, is the final issue of this book. So I think they're doing that big wrap everything up with a big fighty with everybody who's been here. Somehow we put, you know, Conan back in his world and he won't remember. And hopefully he won't remember. It'd be creepy if he did. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, the premise is just, I can't fathom the editorial people that said, this will be a great idea, you guys. But then I also enjoyed the issue. And I felt like the parts of it that were this, you know, terrible, horrible, bloody fight were actually the parts that felt appropriate, because they're the parts that felt like they belonged in a Conan story, which then turns it on its head, because the things that start this story, like the time travel and, you know, Kulan Goth basically being Thanos from the Marvel cinematic universe, don't work. So, I mean, you got the good, you got the bad, you take them both, and there you have 3 out of 5 slices of meatloaf for Savage Avengers 26. Surprisingly, an enjoyable book to me, because, you know, every time I pick up an issue of this thing, I'm like, there's no way this premise will work for a 25th issue. I have now said that 26 times and been wrong every time. So, well, mostly wrong.
All right. There you go. Savage Avengers, out last week from Marvel Comics. Out this week from Marvel Comics, it's The Amazing Spider-Man number 78. Bay, which, you know, means that it's the one that you should put a ring on.
Right.
I don't know enough about the Beyond Corporation. Are they an offshoot of the Rand Corporation? Are they an offshoot of AIM? Because the Beyond Corporation feels evil.
The Beyond Corporation is evil. The Beyond Corporation is actually the company for which Next Wave worked in their apparently now no longer canon series back in 2004.
Okay.
The Beyond Corporation basically kidnapped the characters who became the Agents of Hate, took them into a pocket universe, or as we like to call it, a Warren Ellis limited series. So yeah, they are evil, but they're the kind of evil that's like hidden from the universe. So people think of them like a corporate version of the Kingpin. We know they're evil. The public thinks they're on the up and up.
I think a lot of other people are starting to think that the Beyond Corporation is evil. Obviously, the Beyond Corporation is currently sponsoring the new Spider-Man. What's his name? Ben Reilly. And they've also decided that Ben Reilly needs some training, so they have hired the Daughters of the Dragon to come and train him. So Misty Knight and Colleen, what is it? Wang? Yeah, Wing.
Wing.
That's right. And to train him. And you would think, oh, this is going to be a great issue. All three of them team up to go and do amazing things. No, maybe you missed that part where I said this was number 78. Bay. This is one of those between the issues stories that we have seen before, where this is basically Misty and Colleen going and doing a job for the Beyond Corporation outside of their normal duties of training Spider-Man. And they are tasked with taking down this villain called Obsidian Star. What is his powers? What does he do? It matters not, because that is not the point of this story. It is the point of this story is the Daughters of the Dragon going and doing a scary murder house adventure inside of a pocket dimension that was created both by the Obsidian Star character and some Beyond Corporation technology that zaps them into basically it's a slasher house. Colleen had designed a kind of a danger room scenario for Ben Reilly, where she was basically pitting him against evil, dark slasher villain versions of the Avengers. And it was all, you know, fun and games. But now, because they've been sucked into this miniature dimension, they have to fight for their real lives. And in order to get out, they have to take down the Obsidian Star. But instead of turning the power source that powered Obsidian Star back over to the Beyond Corporation, they have decided to give it to what is her name? Ms. Marvel's friend. She used to be a Ms. Marvel, and now she's what? Ultraviolet? Or what is her character's name? I forget her name. Anyway, they give her the weapon. Yeah, this is art from Eleonora Carlini, which I thought it was Sarah Pacelli, but it says Eleonora Carlini here in my notes. But man, I really love this art. It borderlines between, and I don't mean this to sound derogatory, but it borderlines between kind of good girl art and that cutesy art that people use to attract all the teen girls into a series. And so it's really cool looking and really attractive on a number of different levels. So I hope it does bring in young new readers into this series, because it really does look amazing. This is Amazing Spider-Man number 78. This looks spectacular in its art design. And I was here for the art from the beginning. When I first saw the first page, I was like, oh yeah, I want to read this. And then Jed MacKay delivers a fun little story that is totally contained. You don't have to know anything else about what's going on. It's not like, you know, this power source that they gave away has anything to do with what's coming up in a future story. Well, maybe it does, but it's not important now, nor do you need to know anything that's happened before. This is a nice Daughters of the Dragon going and kicking butt story. It's feels like a done in one. I kind of like that in my comic book stories, especially when there's hundreds of thousands of comics that are dropping in our lap every year. So I like this. I like this a lot. I think you should go out and pick it up. It is $4.99, is available right now. I give it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. A lot of fun. Good job, Marvel, with your Amazing Spider-Man number 78.bay. Now, I think it may just be listed as number 78, but if you see a 78 bay and a 78, realize they may not be the exact same thing, which I hate that numbering system. Matthew and I have had this discussion on Dueling Review multiple times. I hate it's this. Awful. Oh, this is a story between the story or an issue between the issues. It's like, no, stop it. But that's what it is. And
that's
apparently
not how numbers work.
No, that's not. And apparently, as in Marvel solicitations, they say, don't miss this pivotal issue. So apparently this is a pivotal issue. So I'll up it by another half slice of meatloaf to 4.5 slices of meatloaf, because this is this pivotal standalone. Nothing is ever going to come of this issue. So there you go. Rodrigo, what's going over at Dark Horse Comics?
I'll tell you what. Norse mythology.
Yay.
Yes. A book like 800 years in the making. I don't know how long ago any of these happened. That's just how long it feels since Sandman came out. So Neil Gaiman, P. Craig Russell, still doing their comic book adaptation of Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology book. In this issue, we get some shorter stories. In previous issues, we've gotten, you know, the majority of a book being like Thor and Loki's journey through the kingdom of giants and things like that. But in this one, there's just a handful of short stories. The first one is about how the princess of the giants, like her father gets killed and killed by the gods. And the gods, you know, are like, you know, they're not bad guys. So they're like, we'll get you a husband to make up for killing your dad. And of course, hilarity ensues. Nothing is straightforward. And Odin has the last laugh, probably. And then there's a second story about Frey, who you might know as Freya's daughter, or not daughter, brother.
Daughter, brother,
who,
you know.
Yeah, who does a terrible thing of basically the equivalent of like signing up to an online dating site and looking around. And it's like, oh, that was just such a bad idea. And he gets really depressed. And that's kind of what it is. It's fun. The art is really good. Gabriel Hernandez-Walta, Sandy Gerrell do a great job, each with their own part of it. There's an elf in this, and it like looks creepy, which is fun. You know, it's cool that like the gods just look like people, but there's like these other critters around that are super weird. It ends in a huge downer note, which is great because that's literally what Norse mythology is, as far as I've read. So yeah, four slices of meatloaf. I think I've talked about this before. I used to read Greek mythology stories, and we had a few like Hindu and some other ones in comic book form. Those things, you know, used to come out, and I used to read them a lot. And it's nice to sort of read mythology in comic book form again. It just makes it so much more accessible. You just kind of have to keep an eye out for, you know, what is being taken off, what's being emphasized. You always have to kind of look out for that when you're reading an adaptation of like folk work, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. All right, very good. For those of you that have already fired off emails, it's too late. I remember the character's name was Monica Rambeau, who I was thinking of. So there you go. You can recall your emails now. And please do it before we get to the end of Ashley's review over Power of the Dog. Now, what is this?
It's a movie.
It is a movie. Okay. And there's so many good things on Netflix and Netflix Disney Plus movie. And the HBOs and all of this stuff. It's hard to keep track of them.
Yeah. This is the second Western that Netflix puts out in like the span of 6 weeks. And they're both pretty good. So it comes with a recommendation. It is based on a book, which I didn't know, but is apparently a very famous book, also called Power of the Dog. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Jesse Plemons, who I know as you are sitting at home imagining the most English man you can conceive of and the most American man you can conceive of. You are saying to yourself, they should play brothers. They do. And over the course of this movie, you get to watch their relationship fracture and fall apart. And to compare it to something like The Harder They Fall, which is a big, gutsy, bright, loud, well-soundtracked action piece, this is the opposite. It is a tiny, private character piece where you get to watch three actors at the height of their game play three people in their darkest depths and slowly crumble, while at the same time also being reminded that this was less than 100 years ago. Isn't that wild? The Wild West went to like World War II in some places.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a wild thing that I learned from all the Pretty Horses, and it still kind of hurts my brain to think about. But Power of the Dog very much lives in that space. What's funny about it is that it is shot in New Zealand, so anytime they leave their property, which is supposed to be in Montana, I know what Montana looks like because Yellowstone is set in Montana and shoots in Montana. Every time they drive into town, you're like, that's Rohan. Like, Éomer is going to crest the hill with the Rohirrim any second now. But the replacements that they do are really good. If you listen to the pre-show and you heard us talk about like color theory and paletting and stuff like that, Power of the Dog, even though if you watch the trailer now, it drops in a couple days, you will see interesting things with the color palette and how characters change, that you really get a chance to almost unravel the mystery before it ends. And then the other superhero in this movie, because we have a superhero, a girlfriend of a superhero, Jesse Plemons, is Cody Smith McPhee, who you may know as Nightcrawler in the weird flashback X-Men movies.
Mm.
He plays a teenage boy who you spend most of the movie uncertain if he is the true victim of the tale or the true enemy of the tale. And cowboy movies should be mean. This movie's pretty mean, but in a very smart and very grounded way. So if you watched The Harder They Fall, or if you like any of the superheroes in this movie, I'd really recommend checking it out. It's one of the best pieces of acting I've seen this year, and it drops like today when you're listening to this tomorrow. Nice. At the time of this recording, so you got homework to watch this weekend.
Nice. Again, now I was complaining about the drought of content on streaming media. Now it just seems like there's a flood of it all coming in at once. So I wonder if it has to
for you, Stephen.
It's award season. I was also wondering if it's maybe because
season.
Oh, wait a minute, next week is Thanksgiving. What are people going to do? They're going to sit around and want something to watch. So let's get all of our stuff out right before that. So there you go. Listeners, if you want some more insightful reviews with thoughtful commentaries on them, please go over to our website, majorspoilers.com. Now, last week, we spent a lot of time with Steve Canyon. Over 300 pages of Steve Canyon comic books. And that was a bit much. So this week, we're only going to review two comics in our bigger, broader discussion, and they're both holiday-themed. I thought, hey, how do people celebrate Thanksgiving in the comic books? We've seen how Marvel and DC both take on Christmas and Hanukkah and the New Year and occasionally Valentine's Day, but rarely do we get to see how the superheroes live and act and work during Thanksgiving. And so we open our discussion with Vision and the Scarlet Witch, number 6, from Englehart and Howell, Marvel Comics. This is, hey, let's invite all of our Avengers friends over to sit at dinner. So we got Captain America. We've got Doctor Strange. What's another? Oh, Namor shows up.
The Wasp.
The Wasp is there. And then we've got, like, the next door neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Are there?
Who are secretly jewel thieves, by the way. We don't know that yet, but they are.
And then, you know, like somebody's acting coach or something is there. But because you've got some normies that are at this party, everybody's in their superhero costumes, right? So Scarlet Witch is running around preparing Thanksgiving dinner in her Scarlet Witch costume. Vision is there. Quicksilver is there in his costume. Captain America, so on and so forth. And then the knock at the door. And they open it up to discover some old white dude with white hair wearing a grandpa sweater comes in. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm late. Please forgive me. I forgot the address. And then everyone's shocked to discover that they invited an old man to Thanksgiving. This is supposed to be a dinner for young people, young heroes and their neighbors, not old people. And so everyone has this weird tiff over this old man showing up.
Well, in their defense, he does open with, men call me Magneto.
Oh, Magneto. Who would invite Magneto? Who doesn't show up in his costume, by the way?
Yeah. No,
he doesn't have a costume at this point.
He's a villain. Villains don't show up in their costumes.
You said this was a costume party, but me, being the villain, will ignore those rules. Yeah, so Magneto shows up to dinner, obviously. For those of you who don't remember, Magneto is the father of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and whatever.
Yeah, we retconned and then unretconned that. Yeah,
however it works.
Right after.
Yeah, so Scarlet Witch is pregnant, and apparently she called her dad just to have a conversation with him, and in the middle of the conversation, she's like, how could I not invite him to Thanksgiving? He was so interested in my child. And Vision's like, I don't know. And they all sit down and have a very tense Thanksgiving dinner. Do you guys have those Thanksgiving dinners where the black sheep of the family shows up and tries to make nice, but everybody is cold shouldering the person?
Are we literally all about to be like, I am the black sheep, Steve?
Yeah, because I know I am.
Well, I know I am. I can tell you that.
I am the one that is anti-
everything.
Well, anti whatever my mom wants. So,
yeah, we go to my sister's house. She's a nice woman with 6 children in a Pentecostal household, and we sit there, and the Widget and I pretty much don't say anything for about 3 hours, and then we hang with the family, and everything's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So imagine that uncomfortableness, powered up to 25. Yeah. And you've got superheroes who are doing, I wonder why is no one making an attempt to apprehend Magneto? I mean, you've got Doctor Strange is there. You've got Namor is there. You've got Vision. You've got Captain America. Surely one of these fine heroes would stand up and say, you, You are someone who has committed crimes against humanity. It is my duty, even on this day of Thanksgiving, to arrest you and put you into prison.
I'll tell you.
To weigh in on that?
Or I mean, yeah, Rodrigo's going to go first. Rodrigo's going to go first, right. But yeah,
I'll tell you why they don't do that, or why they shouldn't do that. This comic doesn't seem to acknowledge a little thing because everybody's really upset about Magneto being there. It's like, okay, do you guys have that page where like they're kind of doing the Last Supper?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So out of that lineup, how many of those guys have not destroyed a city?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, let he is without sin cast the first stone. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Absolutely. Crystal, part of the Inhumans. The Inhumans have definitely destroyed at least one city, right? Yeah. Scarlet
Namor
Witch and Quicksilver.
The entirety of New York City at one point.
Absolutely. Namor flooded New York City. Obviously, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You know, and I don't know. Like, the Vision's backstory keeps changing, but at some point he probably set a city on fire. It was probably a Nazi city, but still. It's like, who here has not actually committed some sort of small genocide? And the answer is only Captain America.
Right.
So everybody.
Wasp has not destroyed a city, but I'm pretty sure.
I mean, she's destroyed her marriage.
Yeah. Would you like
Hank destroyed that marriage?
Because there is an in-universe reason why.
Okay, I am curious about what the in-universe reason is.
All right. So in X-Men number 150, Magneto killed a submarine filled with Russian soldiers or Navy men, whatever you call sailors.
Seamen?
He was brought to trial before the world court in X-Men number 200, gave himself up for trial, and was attacked by the children of Baron Strucker and chose not to free himself. He stopped the Fenris attack, chose not to free himself. The world court basically said, okay, you know, you're Magneto and you're evil, but we're going to give you a chance to clean up your act. So Professor Xavier had one of his periodic dead time frames, right? And asked Magneto, right, his oldest friend who was cleaning up his act, to be the new headmaster of the X-Men Academy and the New Mutants, giving him a new identity as Brian Xavier. So at this point in time, Magneto has actually been, he hasn't been cleared of his crimes, but he is basically on some sort of weird double secret probation where he is actually considered a hero. He's given up his plans of genociding everybody and basically trying to be a good guy. And then the Secret Wars happened where Magneto showed up and was actually a force with the heroes the whole time. Mm-hmm. So coming out of that, the heroes mostly trust Magneto, and so it's not until 1991 that he goes all full-on genocide again. So this is in that, there's about a 9-year window from about 82 to 91 where Magneto is at least an anti-hero and for a while wearing pink footy pajamas as the leader of the X-Men.
Oh, so yeah,
that happened. I'm old.
Oh, okay.
You know,
because I was worried that they just forgot what everybody else had done.
No, I think you're right, though. If you look at the fact that Namor is there, if you look at the fact that Quicksilver and Wanda were villains, that, you know,
yeah, but
Crystal,
they kind of go through a moment in the issue where they're like, yes, but you guys have all turned to the good side. And it's not clear, at least in my reading of this, that at this point Magneto has turned to the good side. He's just showing
he's
up going like, hey, look, today is Thanksgiving. I think we should put aside our differences and come together as family and have a Thanksgiving. That's how I read the issue. That was his attempt.
Great Steve Englehart, whiny, thought bubble dialogue.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Mm. My children don't love me and it's my own damn fault.
Then he goes and stomps outside and then only to discover that Toad and his toadies have arrived. To me, my toad men.
Yeah, the Toad, by the way, had cosmic powers at this point.
Apparently, because he's created a whole clone of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Yeah, the Toad got taken to space by the Stranger and came back with cosmic powers. Not that anybody cares, I just thought I'd help.
And before that he can attack the house and potentially put his lovely daughter in harm's way and her unborn baby, Quicksilver, Magneto, and Vision go out and take down Toad and his toadies, and then the issue ends because they all get taken up by a spaceship. Yeah.
Like, what I like the most about this is not that suddenly there is action, because I feel like this comic doesn't need it. This comic is kind of fun in the whole, like, just a bunch of people wearing weird costumes trying to relate to each other. It's like, that's good. That's fine. The thing is like, the three people that go out there are Magneto, Quicksilver, and the Vision, right? Wanda's father, brother, and husband. And I'm like, during this whole thing, I'm like, I've been on this car ride. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
It's like, it's a family get together. Somebody's like, oh, we need some stuff from the store. And it's like, Rodrigo, you go get it. And then like, dad's like, oh, I'll go too. And then like, wife's or a sister's husband is like, oh, I'll go too. I need to pick this up. And it's like, you're in that car ride. And it's like, oh, what do we talk about? It's like, you know, we're trying to just cross from Westerville into Columbus. They're actually just fighting like weird space robots.
There you go.
But it is interesting to see that family aspect brought to the forefront, because this is issue 6 of 12 of a series where basically we're establishing Vision and the Scarlet Witch as just a normal married couple in the wilds of New Jersey. Mm. And we had an issue earlier where the Vision came to terms with Wonder Man. And he and Wonder Man are like, okay, we have the same brain patterns. That makes us essentially brothers. So this, you know, this weird orphaned girl from Simcaria or whatever, and this robot built out of the remains of another robot are slowly assembling a family, an extended family, because Quicksilver is there with his ex-wife and daughter. Wait, they may be married at this point. But Quicksilver is here with his wife and daughter. And her dad shows up. It's really kind of cool to see putting this together and saying, oh, yeah, 30 years of Avenger stories actually did, you know, make this weird little family.
Ashley, you've been mighty quiet during all of this. Are you just horrified and shocked over the events of this Thanksgiving dinner gone wrong? Or are you like totally down for this?
I was fairly horrified and shocked by the amount of harassment that Scarlet Witch received from pretty much every single man who was not her father, whether that be sexual or to comment about how crazy she is because she's pregnant and full of hormones. And then she has a scene where she talks about how fat she looks because she's pregnant. And then I read the Daredevil one and said, why did we read this? So it was a real roller coaster for me.
Oh, all right. So let's get to the Daredevil one, because many people may not know that one of the staples of Thanksgiving Day is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Yeah, Green Day has a song about it.
Daredevil 178 takes place in the middle of the Thanksgiving Day Parade. So while there's an awkward family moment going on across the river in New Jersey, Daredevil, Power Fist, and Iron Man are trying to track down some guy.
Now you're doing it on purpose.
No.
What?
Don't troll me.
What? Oh, Power Fist and Iron Man.
You know what you did.
Iron Fist and Power Man. Yeah, yeah. So Daredevil, Iron Fist, and Power Man are all trying to track down some guy that has the goods on the Kingpin or something. And they have to track him down through the Thanksgiving Day parade because he has some paper tickets or something that that they need for evidence. And meanwhile, Iron Fist and Power Man have been tasked with guarding Matt Murdock because some bad people showed up at his place, and Matt Murdock can't be Daredevil because he hasn't been outed yet as of issue 178. And mayhem ensues, and poor Tammy Lou is never going to be able to dance again at the end of the issue.
The would-be mayor of New York, a man named Randolph Cherry, is actually in the pocket of the Kingpin, which is what they're trying to keep from happening. They're trying to keep this Kingpin lackey from ending up as the mayor of New York, which is why the kid with the tickets
to expose him.
Yeah.
And now 40 years later, the Kingpin is the mayor of New York.
Which just shows to go, yeah, there's nothing new in the world, Horatio.
Ashley, you were totally blown away by this one.
No, I didn't understand. Like, in the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, you know it's Thanksgiving in like the third or the fourth panel.
Oh, right.
So
right,
I was like reading this Daredevil issue, and like it's a fine issue, you know, that obviously happens in the middle of sort of a larger thing, but I was like, why am I reading? Like, I kept checking the email, trying to see if I got the number wrong. So you have to get to the end of the issue before you understand. Yeah. There was nothing that I was particularly horrified by in this issue, but most of my emotional experience was confusion.
Yeah, because I don't remember if Matthew was part of that show or not, but Brian and Scroll Brian and Rodrigo and I read through the entire Frank Miller omnibus in one of the very early Major Spoilers podcast episodes. And so I had already read this one. And so I was like, okay. And then I was at that same kind of crossroads as you were, Ashley, where I was like, wait a minute, what does this have to do with Thanksgiving? I was thinking like Foggy was going to invite everyone over for dinner or something. And then I was like, this makes no sense. And then we hit the Thanksgiving
with his
day
wife
parade,
who body shames him and doesn't let him eat pizza.
Yeah. Doesn't let him eat pizza. And so he has to steal it from Iron Fist and Power Man. And then we hit the Thanksgiving Day parade and I was like, oh yeah, now I remember. So I think technically we should have read this Daredevil first and then Vision and the Scarlet Witch second, but I don't know. That depends on how you guys celebrate your Thanksgivings, because at least for me growing up, it was always, you wake up, you watch the Thanksgiving Day parade, you start to watch some football, and then at halftime you sit down and eat your Thanksgiving dinner, and then you come back for the fourth quarter. I don't know how you guys.
The last few years, it's been the dog show, the Westchester dog show.
Oh yeah, but I mean, so Rodrigo, what about you? What do you do first? Eat your dinner, or do you watch the Thanksgiving Day parade, or do you even watch the Thanksgiving Day parade?
We don't usually watch the Thanksgiving Day parade on account of like just solidly being millennials and not watching anything that's not on streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually catch clips of it on YouTube afterwards. We have a tradition where somewhere around the beginning of Thanksgiving, we start watching the Lord of the Rings extended editions.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the festivities, it'll be like all three of them, and they're just playing in the background while we're eating dinner or whatever. And we've gotten into another tradition of just like buying a Thanksgiving meal, like prepared. Uh-huh. So we did barbecue last year, and I think we're just going to do barbecue again this year.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
If I have my way this year, we're just going to do finger foods all day long, just graze all day long, where it's like, here's some chicken wings, here's some little meatballs and smokies and a cheese spread and a fruit spread. And I really would like to sit down with my youngest son, the sidekick. And I said, if we're staying home this year, because I'm always walking in on him watching Amphibia, I said, I want to sit down and watch the entire first season with you. And that's all we're going to do on Thanksgiving is do that and then go play this Marvel United game. And he's like, oh, man, you really want to watch the first season of Amphibia? And I was like, yeah. And he starts giggling like, this is going to be the greatest thing in the world. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, we're definitely, if we do Thanksgiving this way, it's definitely not going to have any Kermit the Frog balloons floating by. It's definitely not going to have an arch nemesis show up because Matthew said he was going to go to his sister's house. So yeah, it's just going to be a very non-traditional Thanksgiving for us. And Ashley, you're going to do family things with, being a new aunt and everything. So,
yeah, got to go see the baby.
Do you guys have any traditional Thanksgiving things?
No,
no?
Okay. Not really.
Okay.
Thanksgiving is super boring and it's just dry, less good chicken. So no, we don't do anything exciting for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Until Hasbro bought out the Power Rangers, we used to watch the part of the parade that debuted the next year's Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can see, oh, well, now they're going to be doing Go Busters. So we would do that for a few years, but the last couple of years, I mean,
the weirdest thing,
didn't go anywhere last year.
The weirdest thing in this comic was just the ever-present Kermit the Frog balloon that was floating by. And I was like,
part of the comic.
I mean, it certainly it is, right? But I was like, is there a specific reason why Frank Miller chose Kermit the Frog? And I went and looked to see, was this like the year after Kermit the Frog debuted or whatever? Kermit the Frog balloon debuted in 1977. And this issue came out in what year? 82?
82.
Something.
Yeah. So this was like Kermit the Frog, well-established flying balloon character. I think there was a Spider-Man balloon that was in the Macy's parade.
Not in 82. No, it debuted in the mid-80s.
Not this time? Oh, okay.
But you should also remember that Kermit's appearance here may have something to do with Marvel's sub-imprint of Star Comics, which actually didn't debut until 84, but would have been in the works at this point.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about
they
that.
Had the, they had Henson's comic book rights because they were doing things like Dark Crystal, and they were doing, I don't think they did a
Fraggle movie adaptations.
Rock. Yeah. Yeah. But it was one of those things where they tried and tried and tried to get a Muppets comic together. They ended up doing Muppet Babies, which actually the first issue of Muppet Babies has Kermit in a Superman costume and nearly got them to all suit. But I wonder if it didn't have something to do with the Henson possible adaptations in the wings.
Man, that would be 2 years ahead. That would be way.
Well, this is Revlon corporate Marvel. They actually did work ahead at that time. So again, I don't
know. And also Frank Miller. I don't know, but I just thought.
Yeah, it might have been just something he thought would be. I don't know, noticeable. Or who draws this?
I mean, it may have been Frank Miller.
Miller and Klaus
Jensen. Okay.
Yeah. It may have also just been that Kermit the Frog is super recognizable. The Muppet Show is going on, and that it was probably one of the more popular floats in the parade. Plus, if you're thinking back again to color theory, Daredevil wears red, Kermit's green. There's a lot of contrast on that page. Then you also have to think, don't a lot of the villains in... in comics wear green, and doesn't Kermit wear green and
green and purple? Yeah.
I mean, Kermit is basically wearing the same outfit as the Vulture.
Yeah. and Kermit is also flying.
How dare you?
So I think we're starting to see our connection. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, two Thanksgiving comics for you. Ashley, what did you think about these?
I think they're both solid, but probably better served in the larger context of the stories that were going on at the time of their publication.
Yeah. And since you won't be here next week, do you have any Thanksgiving words of wisdom or wishes or whatever to share to our listeners all across the world, many of whom will not be celebrating Thanksgiving?
Well, regardless of what you're celebrating, I am thankful for each and every one of you. And consider, particularly if you are charitable with either your time or your funds, if you are living on occupied land, giving back to a foundation or an organizer who supports them. I live on Tongva and Chumash land in Los Angeles, and it's important to me to give back. So I would encourage other descendants of colonizers to do the same.
All right. There you go. Rodrigo, final thoughts on these two crazy holiday issues.
I agree that looking at it from the other's perspective, if you're reading these in the runs that they're at, I'm always floored when superhero comics, all of a sudden it's Christmas or all of a sudden it's Thanksgiving, right? Mm-hmm. Because almost always I'm reading them as trades or even if I'm reading them as they come out, the run has become delayed or something. So it's not Christmas till February, right? It's like all of a sudden there's snow, even though there hasn't been snow on the ground this whole time. So it was interesting to see these things out of context, to see that they are pretty much exactly as jarring as they are when they are in the thing. If you live in Seattle, I think the best organization is Real Rent Duwamish.
There you go. Matthew, what about you?
Honestly, the Englehart Howell 12-issue Vision and the Scarlet Witch Limited from 82-83 is a lost gem of the Marvel Universe. Each issue takes place in 1 month of real time over the space of a year. So you get this, the next issue is the Christmas issue. Earlier in the run, there's an April issue where they have to pay their taxes. And of course, they don't have any money coming in anymore, so they have to pay taxes on their previous year Avengers salary. And it really sets up some, occasionally soap opera, but some really sweet moments that, especially in 82, feel way out of place and bizarre. And if you get a chance to just sit down and read the series, I do recommend it. Because Richard Howell is one of those artists who, for some reason, everybody just looks like a guy that you know. So even when it's Captain America, it's just like Captain America, the guy who runs the tackle shop down by the highway. And as for Frank Miller, he drew comics and they exist. And that's all I'm going to say about Frank Miller due to the scarring from having to review Holy Terror. Mm-hmm.
These two issues are a very unique time capsule of a very specific period in history. And are they a trip? If these came out before you were born, a lot of this is going to be a mystery to you. If they came out after you were born, this might be that nostalgia thing that you need to wrap yourself in this holiday season. But in any case, they're not horrible, right? The art is good. The writing is good in both of these. And I think that they'll hit a spot for somebody who is like, man, I wonder if there's any Thanksgiving comics out there. These two will certainly do that for you. And if you want to buy these, there is a link in the show notes that will take you to the Amazon affiliate page where you can buy the individual issues and add them to your digital Comixology library. It's not going to cost you anything extra. A little bit does come back our way. You can go and read these to your heart's content. And that's where we're going to wrap it up this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
That is correct. We want to hear your feedback. Tell us everything that you do for Thanksgiving and join the rest of the cool kids at the Major Spoilers Discord server to share your thoughts and reactions to the pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie is disgusting. Don't do that. Or even better, send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Give us your hot takes about pie and you might hear your words in an upcoming episode.
Once I ate half a pecan pie and it was pretty rough. Don't forget, you can support this show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
I haven't had any pie yet this year. So I don't know what we're going to have this Thanksgiving. Maybe no pie at all. Maybe this will be a pieless Thanksgiving. You're going to have to wait and come back next week to find out more when we review a holiday tradition here at Major Spoilers. Why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.